All the talk, all the time. This is TalkZone.com. Internet Talk Radio. Now, the Wild About Pets radio show, the place to learn something new about household pets and wild animals. Here's your host, educator and naturalist, Susan Frank.
Hello, and welcome to Wild About Pets. This is the place we talk to leading authors and experts about household pets or wild animals. This week has been National Be Kind to Animals Week. Were you aware of that? And what exactly does that mean? Well, we'll find out in a few minutes. However, as far as the show is concerned, our topic today, rescuing animals, is a perfect way to embrace the spirit of the week. Before we get to our show, in order to make your listening experience more enjoyable, I have a companion website, wildaboutpets.net, that allows you to see photographs of the animals we will be talking about on the show. To look at these pictures while you are listening, just click the purple Look While You Listen button you see on my Talk Zone homepage. What is the number one thing each of us can do right now to help animals in the United States? And since many of you are probably pet owners or work with animals, you know how good it feels to be in the company of animals. But do you know the science behind this and exactly why interacting with animals makes you feel better? My guest today is Karen Winiger, the author of Saved, Rescued Animals and the Lives They Transform. She will answer the questions I posed and also tell us stories about her travels as she wrote her book. She met remarkable people who rescue animals and also met the animals who in return positively changed and affected their rescuer lives. The photography in her book is absolutely outstanding, and you can see some of these photos from her collaborator and photographer, Judy Olofsson, as we talk today. Just click the purple Look While You Listen button. This will take you to my companion website, wildaboutpets.net. And this is exciting. Her publisher and Karen are giving away a few of the books free. So for the first three people that contact me by email today, you will receive one of the free books. I'll give you more details about this as we go along. Let's get started. Welcome, Karen. I am delighted to have you on my program today.
Well, thank you, Susan. I'm thrilled to be here with another animal lover.
Yes, many of them, no doubt.
Yes.
Karen Winiger was born horse crazy in Albert Lea, Minnesota, and she was always bringing home birds, rabbits, frogs, salamanders, and snakes that she assumed needed rescuing. A former reporter at the Minneapolis Star, later the Star Tribune, she freelances for publications ranging from the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal to People, Equus, Practical Horsemen, and others. Her writing has won Lowell Thomas Awards for both investigative reporting and for maritime journalism. She has also won numerous awards in the equine industry, including two AQHA Steel Dust Awards and the U.S. Equestrian Award. Karen, first of all, what is the story behind the National Be Kind to Animals Week, and what meaning would this have to us?
Well, a farrier friend of mine says that every week should be National Be Kind to Animals Week. We shouldn't treat them any differently this week than any week, and I think that's a good point that he's made.
Yes, I agree.
But it was instituted, I believe, by the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals and promoted by them. And, you know, we have national weeks celebrating just about everything. So 1 week a year is a week for heightened awareness to the needs of animals nationally, which are, as you know, Susan, very great and probably greater now than they have been in a long time due to the economic problems we're having.
Yes. In your introduction, Karen, you write this book is about people trying to heal the damage done to animals and how animals heal suffering human beings. Now, your book takes us into the lives and homes of so many different people and animals all over the country. How did you come to write this book?
Well, it took about 5 years. Judy, the photographer, and I are animal lovers. Animals have made the biggest difference in our lives, and we decided at midlife, when you begin to concentrate on what really matters, that this is what we wanted to do, was to share the stories of people who felt as we did, that animals really give us more than we give them. Even if we've saved their lives, they give us so much more back. So we spent time jetting off or driving off from our regular jobs to various states There are 28 chapters in Saved. They are all true stories from coast to coast. And we ran into people everywhere who wanted to share the stories of their extraordinary love for their animals and how those animals really came through hell in many ways and were rescued, and now their lives are much better. And so are the lives of the people who saved them.
Did you find that there was any particular type of person or group that was more likely to be involved in this type of work with animals, Karen?
Well, no, and that was the interesting thing. We didn't set out to tailor this to a certain demographic, and sure enough, it represents, these 28 true stories represent just about everybody. Rich, poor, middle class, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, gay, straight, people from, you know, many, many states, old people, young people, some people with handicaps. It just happened that that mixture ended up in the book. Those were the most vivid stories that we found.
And I notice you also tell stories of single animals who forge bonds with individuals, all the way to people who started their own organizations and shelters and are caring for a multitude of animals. And I also found that, you know, some of these people had just pennies, barely to spare for themselves, and were spending millions of dollars in caring for animals.
Well, they were inspired to help animals, and in some cases that meant literally raising money to do so. Some of the stories are so fantastic. There was a guy who was a flight attendant. His name is Randy Grimm, and he's in East St. Louis. And as a flight attendant, what he did was smuggle lost animals or abandoned animals home in the bathrooms of airplanes. For years, he said, if you couldn't use the bathroom on your airplane, it's because he had an animal in there and had locked the door.
Who would have thought?
Smuggled it back from Europe or Asia or someplace. And then he became a person who literally went into the streets of East St. Louis, some of the roughest places I've ever seen in the world, and takes in feral dogs and gets them tamed and rehomed.
And you know what? Later on, when we get into the stories and some of your travels, I wanted to say that I was so surprised, Karen, by the things I did not know and the worlds and environments you went into. And one of the remarkable stories was the one you're talking about in St. Louis. And so maybe we'll be able to touch on that. But again, as you mentioned, there are 28 chapters and fabulous photos that go along with each of those chapters, and I have been very fortunate that you allowed me to have some of these photographs. So again, for anyone who wants to be able to look at these photographs while you're listening, you'd want to click on that purple Look While You Listen button, or if you're on my website, wildaboutpets.net, just go to Look While You Listen feature. And some of the first photographs, like 1 through 4, I chose because they're representing kind of the idea of the spectrum of the animals, you know, and you'll see an individual cat, just gorgeous, and this adorable dog, Annie. By the way, what kind of dog is Annie, Karen?
Annie is a beagle.
Oh, that is. Okay.
I think she's close to purebred, if not purebred.
Okay. You know, it's amazing because we're looking at a photograph of this beagle looking trustfully up into the camera, but only has one eye. And it's not a, you know, it's not a ugly photograph. You know, the eye is healed. But in that one eye, you see so much love and trust and peace. It's remarkable.
Isn't it really? She was so horribly abused, and now she looks like she's winking at you, and she has the gentlest, most loving expression on her face.
Yes, she sure does. And then, pictures 3 and 4 are of some of the different people. And, you know, maybe we'll get to these stories. If not, you know, they're in the book. But I wanted to represent, you know, some of the different caregivers that have many animals. But let's get to some of the actual stories that were some of my favorites. And so that would be, we're going to go to picture number 5. And it tells the story of Joe, our Ohio. And what I'd love you to do, Karen, is if you could just read the first page going into that story to set this, because I was just so entranced. And as we look at this picture of this big man with his teeny little kitten in his hand, it's just so amusing. And then after you read that page, you can tell us more about the story.
I will do that then. Okay. This is from the chapter called Maricopa Mash. It's about Sheriff Joe Arpaio and the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office Animal Safe Hospice, otherwise known as the MASH unit. The toughest sheriff in the country, the guy who stalked drug runners in the mountains of Turkey and in Mexico City, who capped his 30-year career of coming down hard on bad guys by booting 2,000 convicted criminals out of the county jail and into army tents behind razor wire, has just been startled by 8 ounces of caramel-colored kitten. It won't bite, will it? Says Sheriff Joe Arpaio, flinching from the handful of cat thrust at him by a Maricopa County Sheriff's Office Animal Safe Hospice unit officer. I'm a dog man, you know, he says, regaining some of his composure, but still warily holding the kitten away from his chest, where a gold tie tack in the shape of an automatic pistol gleams. I hate cats, he grumbles. The kitten looks up at him and squeaks. He looks down at her, then accusingly at the MASH officer. Hey, what do you feed her? She's thin, he bellows.
And that was the start of this amazing story of what he did in his prison?
It is, and he did an amazing thing. This is a very controversial guy who has been the sheriff of Maricopa County for some time. He's very popular and very polarizing. But what he did with the old jail, which was so overcrowded that it had about, 9,500 inmates in there, and it was made for about a quarter of that many, was to put the inmates in a tent city outside of town, and he took the old jail and turned it into the most amazing animal shelter. And the last time I talked to them, they had, let's see, inside the prison, rescued animals, and animals, of course, from court cases where they were waiting to be disposed of one way or another. He had 13 cats, 83 dogs, 4 goats, 15 horses, 3 pigs, and a donkey. And when I was there also, they had cockatiels, and it was a zoo inside a jail. But the program is so outstanding, the MASH program, because female inmates can apply to work inside that unit and learn basic sort of veterinary skills so that they can get a certificate upon graduation from that training. And they have much better chance of getting a job once they've served their time and they're on the outside. And they go on to jobs related to animals. The animals have had a very healing effect on them. And then there's a MASH 2 unit, which is slightly outside of town, just across from the tent city with the razor wire. And male inmates can apply to work there. And they work with horses and goats and donkeys and other animals that have been rescued, and frequently it's from ranches where methamphetamine was being made, and once there was a drug bust there was nobody left to take care of the animals. So they learn animal care too and go through the same sort of training and again get a certificate that helps them show some job skills when they're on the outside. And most of all, they experience that fun and that unconditional love, which for many of the people in there, and some of whom we talk to, is the first time they've ever had that kind of love in their life.
And, you know, as you're talking about that and as I read the story, I'm thinking that not only the feeling of being loved by an animal unconditionally, but someone to love, and the idea of having some hope in, someone who happens to be imprisoned, that hope in their heart probably is the foundation for whatever rehabilitation back into life, and an encouragement to return into the world is probably just instrumental.
It really is. And, you know, I think wounded people can empathize with wounded animals, and sometimes they can trust animals before they can ever trust other people. So this is not the only prison program like this in the country, but it's certainly the only one where they've taken a jail and converted it to a shelter for unwanted animals. And it has remarkably good effects on recidivism rates. To work in these units, people are so much less likely to reoffend and get back in jail.
That is marvelous, and you go into more detail about it, which is just so delightful in the chapter. Let's talk about another one, the story of Lillian Clancy and Don Morrow of Virginia, who I was intrigued by their lobbying efforts for legislative change. Tell us about them, and this is photograph number 6 for anyone who is looking at the photographs.
Well, Lillian and Don are really impressive people. I met them out in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, and they moved there from San Francisco. They were successful business people, and out in San Francisco, they found a dog on a construction site who had been injured, and they rescued the dog, and it started them on a career of taking in animals. But more importantly, they recognized, especially in Virginia, that there was not legislation in place to provide money by license fees to help fund shelters or to have serious legislation to enforce laws against puppy mills. And also, euthanasia was being done in a horrible way in Virginia by gas chambers, mm-hmm. which is not effective and not humane, and they wanted to stop that. So they got moving on several issues, and as they did that, they formed a group, and they worked on changing legislation in Virginia, and they did it successfully. But as they did that, they kept taking in animals. And fortunately for Lillian and Don, they have a huge, huge plot of land, and they were able to take in a lot of dogs, and they had about 16 while I was there, and they were really well cared for. Some of them were blind, some of them were very, very old and arthritic. Many of them had just showed up. I think Lillian and Don, the word was out on the dog, stray dog grapevine. This is a good place to go. And they're the kindest people, but they're also ferociously organized, and we're working on legislation that ultimately did pass. And things are much better for animals as a result of their efforts. There was one dog in that photo, the black dog sitting there looking at Lillian, mm-hmm. who simply showed up in their living room. And this is a big house with pretty good security. And her name is Fairy Fleur, mm-hmm. and she's a beautiful, long-haired, black, mixed-breed dog. And she literally was on the sofa one day when they went downstairs into the living room.
And they had no idea how she got into the house.
No idea to this day. Mm-hmm. No idea. And many others they picked up off the highway where they'd been thrown out of cars. They're great-hearted people, and they're wonderful advocates for animals. Tireless advocates.
And you know what? When you were talking about maybe like that, you know, the little vibrations that the animals put out there, actually I have a friend, I know someone who, wherever she goes, whether it's in the suburbs or the city, somehow abandoned cats wind up coming up to her. And I think, and as many animal lovers know, that there's levels of perception that, you know, we are unaware of.
Absolutely.
And somehow these animals maybe do pick up, and they feel the people that are probably the ones that will be those caregivers. So it is remarkable, isn't it?
It really is. I seem to be the local turtle goddess. Whenever I'm going down the highway, I find all the turtles that are in trouble, and I, you know, leap out, put on my flashers, stop traffic, and pick up the turtles. And I've taken to carrying a tennis racket so the big snapping turtles can bite on it. And then I drag them off to the side, pick them up with leather gloves and a blanket over them, and put them in my trunk, and I take them to the nearest lake or to the Wild Animal Rehabilitation Center, or the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, if they're injured.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so you know about that these animals just kind of feel you.
They really do. There are people throughout my book, throughout Saved, that specialize in a certain kind of animal. One woman has a long history of being kind and rescuing horses who are in need, and they seem to find her through a sort of national grapevine now.
Ooh, which story is that, Karen?
It's about Drew Fitzpatrick. And
oh, good. We're going to talk about her next. Yeah, she's right in line here because I was struck by her story. Keep going.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, number 7. And by the way, anyone who wants to see these pictures, click the purple Look While You Listen button on my Talk Zone show page. We are looking at photograph number 7.
Let me check because I think that photograph was the Middleburg Humane. Oh, no, that is Drew. Oh, good. Well, she's here in Minnesota. She runs the Minnesota Hooved Animal Rescue Organization. And she accepts horses and goats and some sheep and a few other creatures. And it's all funded through donations. She had a very, very disturbing childhood that you'll read about in the book, mm-hmm. and became a runaway back in the 60s when life was really colorful, to say the least, and has found a way of being useful in the world by taking in animals who are abandoned, abused, unwanted, broken, and healing them. She has a network of volunteers that she relies on to house some of them because she can't take them all in. But she really does a very heroic job with her animals. Sometimes horses get loose and are hit on the highway, and she's the person that the cops will call locally because, frankly, she knows how to do the hard work, including, mm-hmm. you know, the proper way of euthanasia for horses in a agonizing situation like that. And her story is truly heart-wrenching, but like many of them, it has a happy ending.
Yes, they do, and it is a very personal story. And later on, I'm going to ask what it was like for you. We'll be going to a break in a moment. But yes, they're very personal stories. You're walking into people's lives, and I noticed they were very open and sharing, and it touched me in disturbing and wonderful ways. And as you said, there was such a happy ending that it was wonderful. Well, it is time for us to take a short break. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back with more after this.